Hey, this is Samantha Fish, and you're listening to Iron City Rock.
Yo, this is Tyler from Tyler Bryant and the Shakedown. You're listening to Iron City Rock.
This is Jim McCarty of the Yardbirds speaking, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Episode 515 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 515, delighted to be joined by Mr. Coco Montoya. Coco, for those of you maybe not familiar with the backstory, at one point had played guitar with John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, and if his resume stopped there, he'd be a legend. If anybody is familiar with the lineage of John Mayall and the Blues Breakers guitarists, you'd know what we're speaking of. Coco will be coming into town to do a show October 15th at the Jugglers Rhythm Grill in Warrendale. He's got a brand new album out called Writing on the Wall, so we had a chance to catch up with him and learn from his amazing perspective. He's an incredibly interesting guy. He's got a really cool guitar setup. We had a chance to talk about it on the new album, what were the inspirations behind the songs, etc. So without further ado, we're going to play you some new Coco Montoya and get into that interview.
To make you suffer for so long, let me tell you from the start, from the bottom. I could cry.
right, ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Coco Montoya. How you doing, Coco?
I'm doing fine, John. Great to talk to you today.
A pleasure to get a chance to speak to you. You are going to be coming into Pittsburgh in just a hair under a month now to do a show at Jurgles in Warrendale, just outside of Pittsburgh. Got a new record out, which had an opportunity to listen to Writing on the Wall. So exciting time. Can you talk a little bit about the songs on the new record?
Yeah, sure. And which ones in particular do you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, this album is kind of your first since the pandemic. Did any of that kind of bleed into the songwriting, or are these songs that you may have had in the well a little longer?
You know, I some of them we had in the well a little longer, and some were written during the period of process of recording and getting prepared, all the pre stuff, trying to get everything together. It was a combination of all things. We had definitely enough time. We weren't going anywhere, so we definitely utilized the time in the studio to really put our minds together. Writing with Dave Steen, I've been doing that for many years. But to have him and Jeff Paris write with me, they're incredible writers. And Jeff Paris also plays in my band. So we took advantage of that and did some Zoom writing sessions. And we got lucky with some good stuff, I think.
Was it hard for you to have that much time? And that might be a strange question, but, you know, you're probably used to album, tour, you know, to pay the bills. And then to come home and kind of be grounded for that length of time, I have to imagine that is one of your longest stints off the road. Was that difficult for you to deal with?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was difficult for all of us out here in this business. It was difficult to do. We had two things going on at the time we were making the album. My keyboard player, Jeff Paris, a monster musician, had a studio in his backyard, but it needed to be updated and everything. So we took that on with, we had the time. So we updated things and decided to record in his studio in the back so we could have freedom of not worrying about the time clock, you know. Mm-hmm. That really helped us in a lot of ways, but we definitely took probably longer than I wanted to. And probably won't take that much time again to do an album. But I was grateful at this moment to get the studio going. And of course, it won't take as long next time. But
was it something where as a musician, you tend to overthink things when you have that much time? You know, like you do a take and it's so easy to just redo it. You know, you end up second guessing, your third guess.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful with that because, you know, with the newer type of recording systems, Pro Tools and the like, it gives you probably too much opportunity. Being reminded by the old albums that you love from the 70s, the 60s, and so on, 50s, even that, you know, they'd take like two or three shots at it. And you pick out the best one, and you know whatever blemishes are on there are gives the music character. I think with the Pro Tools in the digital age, we tend to go crazy with trying to make perfection, and that to me is really scary territory to step into, and to always remind yourself that it's got to have character, it's got to have a blemish here and there, you know, to give it something nice to listen to, you know. That's what I feel, and that's what we're trying to get back to.
Yeah, I mean, you figure you could really kind of make it stale if you played a perfection, especially I think with the blues. I mean, if you were playing, you know, certain kinds of metal or even pop music, you know, you may want perfection, but I think blues, you need that patina, for maybe lack of a better word, on the music to give it that character.
Well, I think all music itself, whether it's, you know, grunge or you know, heavy metal or or soul or pop. I mean, I think that's the problem we're getting into. It's so polished that it's, you can't feel it.
Yeah.
And that's really what needs to happen here, I think, in any genre, in my opinion. You know, it's kind of, I use this analogy, which is in my old days, an old man. In the old days, in the Playboy magazine, there was these beautiful women in there, and you saw the beauty marks, you know, maybe a little scar here and there. They airbrushed these women after a while so much, and in regular modeling, Mademoiselle and all that stuff, they airbrushed these women so much they look like mannequins.
Yeah.
To try and go for, you know, perfection. And part of the beauty of that was that you saw them all, you know, as they were, and that was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's impossible for them to be that perfect. And same thing for music. It's the same thing. If you make it so perfect that you can't feel it, then you're defeating the purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter what you've done.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's it's an excellent analogy, I think, because it's something that I think people can get their mind around. Coco, one of the things I often wanted to ask you about, and I'm sure you probably talked about this to death, but as a left-handed guitarist, and I'm looking at a picture of you playing right now, you know, is that the Albert King kind of the guitar is strung, you know, the high E down to the low E being furthest away, or how is your setup? Mess,
John, it's a mess. It's
it's not a mess if it works. It's just, you know.
Well, it's a thing where everybody I've ever talked to about that playing that way, from Otis Rush to Albert King, you know, I've had personal communication talk to, and Eric Gales. It was just something you did when you were first learning, especially if you weren't coming from a technical point where you had a teacher and people were guiding you. You were just in your garage or in your little room in the back, and you were just, you know, attacking it personally. And so there was no one there to tell you right from wrong. And that's usually, I don't think I met anybody that's ever picked up the guitar like that. And that was what they intended. They just didn't know that there was a left hand to it and a right hand to it. And that's the way I was. I picked it up and was solo by myself in my room trying to figure out how to make noise on this thing. And I think I invented an E chord, which I thought I found it just from putting my fingers and watching other people play. And I found an E chord, which I didn't know it was an E chord. I didn't know the name of it. But I bashed away on that thing until my mom would try, you know, about to kill me.
Yeah.
She'll learn another chord, please, you know. I got a thing. So
you're two chords away from mastering the instrument at that point.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But it's, the playing in that way has just always been the mistake. I think everybody I ever talked to didn't know any better. So you just did it. No one was there to tell you no. Then you just, you know, there was no limits. You just did what you did.
So when you're doing that, you've got what would be a left-hand guitar body and a right-hand guitar neck. Am I?
Yes. Seeing?
Okay. And then is it strung like a normal left-handed guitar then?
It's strung like a right-handed guitar.
Oh, okay.
It's strung so right-handed.
Okay. So you've got the Albert King kind of, well, what we think might be
Albert King. It's the Albert King.
Yeah,
Otis Rush, those people, Eric Gales now, incredible player. There's a bunch of guys out there that have done it and they're still doing it. You know, and it's just these odd techniques.
I think sometimes though, when you approach it like that, like you said, you didn't have a teacher necessarily. You know, you don't know you're breaking a rule, but it also probably takes you in different creative avenues than the norm. You know, like generation like mine, where you grew up and there were tab books everywhere. You know, you could just pop down to the local music store and pick up Stevie Ray Vaughan's book and come home and realize you can't do that. You know, like, you know, you think you buy the book. If I pay $25, I can play just like Stevie Ray Vaughan. And then you get home and you open it up and realize that was just a line. But you know, sometimes that different perspective to the instrument, I think, is, you know, probably helps take you creatively in different directions than someone who might have just handed you a left-handed, you know, Squire, you know, Strat, and just said, here you go, here, this is the way you should play because you're left-handed.
Right. Well, at least you to your own devices, you know.
Do you invert the pickups then as well, or do you, are your pickups still in the standard left-handed position?
They're still exactly the way it was built for me. I'm not a real technical guy when it comes to guitars because of the way I play. I'm not into vintage guitars and stuff like that. If I were to own a really, really nice, you know, 59 Les Paul, I probably would never be able to play it because anything you do to touch it, you know, remove a screw or something, you devalue it, you know. So vintage guitars were never something I got into. I just wanted guitars that played well and felt good for me, and that's all I needed. More of a tool, you know.
I can certainly understand.
Yeah, but that. it definitely makes you come out the other end with something a little more unique in your feel and your touch. And that's natural for any guitar player. Eventually, the goal is to find your own identity. And that's what I was told by B.B. King. I was told that by Albert Collins all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Albert, to be able to imitate Albert, you know, not the greatest, but definitely imitated him a lot. Of course, Eric Clapton, first big influence. I mean, I went and got those albums and tried to play all those songs note for note. And I think the goal is to get that youth part out of the way and saying, yeah, I can play Crossroads like Clapton, you know, I can, reasonably, you know.
Yeah.
And then later on you say, well, okay, now you need to take what you've learned and apply it and give it your own thing, you know. Mm-hmm. It's got to come out you. And that's what the blues is all about, is interpretation. Yeah. That's a big rule in the blues. You'll get a guy that, another guy that will come up and say, I can play T-Bone Walker, you know, do Stormy Monday. Well, that's kind of a cliche song for everybody. Let's do Stormy Monday. Well, it's always listenable if the guy's playing the way he plays, as opposed to a guy imitating T-Bone Walker to a T, you know?
Yeah.
And you would say, well, I've got all those CDs and albums back home. I can listen to T-Bone Walker, the original guy, than to listen to a parrot. You know, I'd be more interested in hearing the young guy put his own thing on it, on a T-Bone Walker. Now I'm interested. Now I want to listen.
Yeah. And that's a great perspective to approach that with, because so many people do, you know, it's how well can you mimic what somebody else did. Right. And thinking of your time in the, you know, with John Mayall, you would think, you know, because you were relatively young at the time, that might be something you'd almost strive for. I just need to play Clapton and, you know, I need to play all these songs the way they were recorded, you know, perfect.
Yeah. You know? It's amazing that you say that, John, because that's actually what happened. I forgot the number one rule in the blues, in the first chapter of the blues interpretation. When I got with John Mayall, I somehow switched into my head that the pressure was on me to play Have You Heard like Eric Clapton,
sure.
You know, Driving Sideways like, you know, like Mick Taylor, you know, stuff like that, and so on. And Peter Green, whatever Peter Green song we would do, you know, I for some reason thought I had to be these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And John called me out on the carpet one night and just said, hey, you know what? I think you're off on the wrong step here. He said, Eric is not here. Clapton is not here. It's your chair. He said, when we do Have You Heard or something, play like that guy I heard at the jam session that I got a tape of you and called you up to hire you. That's the guy I want to hear tonight.
Yeah.
He said, you don't have to be any of these guys. And John gave me he made me realize that I've been chasing, you know, going down the rabbit hole with this thing, you know, and it freed me up. It made me say, tonight, you're right. It's my version of Have You Heard, or Little Girl, or one of the famous John Mayall songs. My version of it tonight.
Yeah, that's some heavy advice coming. I mean, that's like you know, having God come down and tell you to do it your way. And, yeah. and you think about that, that might have been the reason we're still talking, you know, because, you know, at some point, if you had just gone up there and mimicked what the other guys did, okay, that's certainly impressive.
Yeah.
But at the end of that, what did that say about you as a musician, that you were a karaoke sort of thing? You know, you learning right. to be you is why we're all still listening to you. You know, I mean, that's...
Well, I took the essence of, you know, taking the essence of mm-hmm. all those guys. Clapton, there's no doubt about it. If you sat down and listened to me, if you can't hear there's Clapton in there, you can't hear there's Albert Collins in there, then you're not listening. It's in there, but it's not them exactly to a T. Mm-hmm. It's taking what I learned from those guys and applying it myself and giving it my own identity, you know? It's just really, really the goal of any player is to be as good as you can be. But just the most important thing is to find your own identity. Like one time, Albert Collins, he was in a music store. He told me this story and it was amazing. He was in a music store and they were blasting music all over in Houston, Texas. And all of a sudden, one of Albert's songs came on, and this guy in the store said, "Oh, there's that damn Albert Collins. I can't stand that." And I looked and I said, "Pop, did you get mad?" And he goes, "No." He says, I laughed. And I said, "Why?" He said, "He knew who it was, didn't he? That's all that mattered to Albert."
That's a great point.
That guy, as soon as it popped up, the guy went, "That's that damn Albert Collins."
Mission accomplished. Yeah, that's a great way
good
to
or look bad, at it. But you knew who it was, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it's good to be have that recognition and to be on the radio and reach that kind of audience. That's fantastic. Coco, in your current run, you've obviously got a ton of tour dates lined up. What can folks expect from you as far as, you know, is there a mix of the new album in the set? You've got, you know, quite a few albums under your belt, you know, and then your past, you know, pre-solo material. What can we expect from you that night?
Well, I think, you know, we're definitely going to introduce songs from the new album. We're going to bring some of those in because I know some people want to hear that, but we never shy away from the old stuff too, because there's a lot of people that come here to hear old tunes that I've done over. I mean, when you've done that many songs, and it's, mm-hmm. So we're going to bring in a healthy mixture of everything, you know, as far as my solo career and stuff. Fantastic. And definitely going to bring in some tunes from the new album, you know. Looking forward to that part, you know. It's always great when you put something else out and you got some new material to play. And people, don't worry. We're going to definitely do some of the old ones as well.
You always have those kind of staples you have to play or someone goes home mad. But that's one of the things I love about the blues is it, I think, you know, maybe it's the fact that, you know, people don't get like, you know, top 10 blues hits. You can go see someone and they can mix it up and you're not necessarily walking away going, "I can't believe he didn't play that one signature song." You know, I love that about it. You know, you can just play something totally off the wall and people will be just as glad to hear it because it just draws you in. So,
yeah, well, it's all great. You got, you know, that many tunes where you actually can't do them all. So that's a
great problem to have.
Cover as much ground as you can for an evening, you know, to give them their 90 minutes plus and make sure that you send people home happy.
Awesome. Well, Coco, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Again, you're coming in on Sunday, October 15th, the Jurgles in Warrendale. It's just outside of Pittsburgh. We'll have links.
Yeah, I like that place.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic to have you back, and we'll be part of the year where it's beautiful in Pennsylvania. You know, leaves will be nice and colorful here, so we'll look forward to seeing you when you get here, man.
Oh, that sounds great, man. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope to see you down there.
All right, a giant thank you to Coco Montoya for doing the show. His new album, Writing on the Wall, is available now. You can get that at all the usual locations. He will be at Jurgles Rhythm Grill in Warrendale, Pennsylvania. We will have links on ironcityrocks.com for tickets and also a link to his website if you want to pick up the new album, which I highly, highly recommend. I want to thank you all for listening. Our website, ironcityrocks.com. Our social medias are all /ironcityrocks, so you can check us out, follow us, watch for ticket giveaways, concert announcements, poll questions, all kinds of good fun. And also you can drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Obviously this episode, very blues-centric. We had Mayhem on the last episode, very black metal. What kind of genres of music are you interested in? What do you like to hear? Things maybe you're not as interested in hearing. Let us know. We'd love to hear your feedback. And until next time, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen.